Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sound Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, an anthology where Black women writers share their thoughts on rest, grief, and intimacy. And Sheila E. talks about her early days as an artist and her upcoming show in East Palo Alto. Today's show is about rest and rhythm. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sound Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. You know, between politics and people's personal lives, there's a lot going on. But have you taken a nice deep breath today? If you haven't, I'd invite you to take one with me. Just breathe in and breathe out. Sometimes you got to take a nice, good cleansing breath to kind of just settle. Next Thursday night at KLW's event space in downtown San Francisco, I'm hosting a celebration of the book When We Exhale, an anthology of Black women rooted in ancestral medicine. And When We Exhale, Black women write about rest, grief, and intimacy. It's a beautiful collection that reminds us of the load that the world puts on Black women's shoulders and also how Black women heal. I was honored to write the book's foreword. And joining me is Allie Jones, the book's co-editor and co-founder of Black Freighter Press. Poets Adrian Danielle Oliver and Nia Pearl are two writers who contributed to the book, and they're also here with me or on the call. And they'll be performing at our next event next week, along with other powerful, moving Black women writers in the Bay Area. I took a deep breath and just lost my thought. Allie, Adrian, and Nia, I got too relaxed. Welcome.
Thank you for having us, Janae. Really excited to be here.
I'm just so grateful for all of you and just, you know, being vulnerable and just sharing just some really beautiful, powerful, intimate pieces. Allie, I know you put a lot of love and work into this book. What inspired you to release this book?
You know, you asked me this question. I've been sitting with it for a little while because there were so many points where this book almost didn't come out. So many pieces that had to come together. There was a point where paper production was an issue. So there was a lot of trials and tribulations. And I remember the initial thought was just, you know, like, where do Black women heal? And where do we have those spaces to actually exhale? And when I talked to Black women, they were like, well, with other Black women, you know, like, those are the spaces where I actually let my shoulders drop, where I'm actually able to connect with folks. And so in that, I was like, well, I've seen, you know, anthologies of Black writers, Black poets, and I, you know, admire them. And I was like, where are Black women healing? You know, again, we also see Black women writers looking at craft, right? And so I wanted to have a space for us to really sit with the things we don't usually talk about, but the things that are really entrenched in our everyday lives.
Yeah. And these themes, grief, rest, and intimacy. Why did you settle on those themes in particular?
Well, like, kind of as I was saying, there were themes that were coming up often, but were not always talked about in the similar spaces. Yeah. So if we're looking at grief, it was in one corner. Looking at rest, it was in another corner. We're looking at intimacy, is in a whole other corner. And what I've seen and lived is that all of those things can live in one space. And they generally live in our bodies. They live in our families and our communities. And so just thinking about how each of those, you know, themes actually had sub-themes. So like with the editors, we were going through and we're like, ooh, where does rage live? And where does, you know, sensuality live? And where does it look like to slow down, right? Like, what we're like, you know, our iterations of those themes live. And so it was a really beautiful reflection to see, oh yeah, some of these are like overlapping.
Yeah.
And so there were points where it was like, well, if we section things off, this actually could live in the rest section and in the grief section. How do we want to move with that? Right. And so kind of just remembering that there was not just duality, but this like multitude of experience that does happen. And so I think it was more of a permission practice to kind of know that you don't have to just be grieving or just be resting, right? That you can kind of move through all of that with a level of care that is not isolated.
And so When We Exhale, an anthology of Black women rooted in ancestral medicine. Define ancestral medicine. And what does that look like to you, Allie?
I think about my like in my family, ancestral medicine is like thinking about our food, and like that was one of the reasons why recipes was really important. So like there were writers who were creating recipes that were maybe not quite food. Some of them were like, you know, like a cider. Some of them were looking at, I mean, Adrienne has a great recipe that I love in there. And so just thinking about, yeah, all of these kind of remedies that have existed that have always been with us. And I think specifically ancestral medicine, because I think we, and as we know, Black women experience so much medical trauma. There's a point where it's like, okay, we can't rely on everyone else for our healing. And historically, we have been the healers, the medicine women, the people, you know, the midwives, the death doulas, like just the people who have been holding it down. And so thinking about, again, like who heals the healer, that question kind of looped into, well, I think for us, it's a remembering, you know, that all of these tools have always been ours and have always been nearby.
I want to ask, toss that question over to Adrian and Nia, whoever wants to take that on. What does ancestral medicine look like to you?
I'll just echo what Allie said.
And
It's
it's
really like,
Adrian, yeah. Go ahead,
oh
Adrian.
yes, this is Adrian. yes, it's really the wisdom passed down through our grandmothers, like the recipes and the prayers and the songs, the freedom songs, the movement, all the things that help us not be stagnant. I really am concerned about how much time we spend sitting and being in front of screens. And you know, I have vivid memories of sitting on the porch and watching the sunset with my grandmother, and I really considered that to be a type of medicine. There's nothing like being able to look into the horizon. Of course, this was a humid Arkansas summer night, but still, the horizon of the sun setting was always so medicinal.
Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, to sit with your grandmother and look at the sunrise. Oh, that's gorgeous. Nia, you wanted to add?
Yeah, absolutely. I love both the imagery and the ideas that both of you have brought up so far. And I would echo that for me, I think ancestral medicine is storytelling and the practice of gathering and archiving family stories, stories of community and friends and loved ones. I think there's a lot of power in, you know, as we're navigating our current scenarios and our situations, being able to look back at where our ancestors, how they got through, and carry with us the lessons and the stories and the memories. And so I see that, you know, in my writing and in how I'm practicing documenting ancestral medicine. It really is through storytelling and using that as a guide for all of us.
What makes Black women's ancestral medicine unique? Anybody want to answer that? Ooh, I threw out a Jeopardy question.
And now I feel like we were all like, ooh, what makes it unique? I think the flavor, like there's so much layered into it. You know, we kind of called in grandmas, but I always think about like a spice rack, you know, like all the different things that come into who we are that like, yeah, we move in our own way that you really can't replicate. People try to. But there's really this uniqueness that is really intuitive, both like in our gut and in our third eye. I feel like there is like even again through the depths of despair, like we find ways to show up or, you know, connect or, you know, build stuff out. So I feel like there's a layer of like buoyancy that we have.
And then too, also too, like to also hold space, which what this book does too as well, is that because I know some people romanticize the resilience of Black women, but that's a lot. It's not easy to be resilient, and especially too for Black women and other marginalized people, I'm sure can relate. You don't have a choice but to be resilient, you know, you don't have a choice. Allie, you want to read a piece?
Yes, and actually, I thought about what your poem, My Strength, was something I just thought about as you said that.
Oh, thank you.
All right. This piece is called I Dare You. Black women make up 40% of human beings trafficked in the United States. I dare you to see Black girls. Witness the almond-colored triumph in our eyes to recognize Black girls beyond the colonizer lies. I dare you to release. Instant gratification and exploitation. Our pain cannot be fixed with a Band-Aid. Black girls are not a gas station or a shopping mall, not here for your entertainment. We are short and fat and thin and tall, wilting and blooming, so much more than the eye can see. We wear crowns that can get heavy. I dare you to hold space for Black girls who bloom in a drought, Black girls who ask too many questions and don't learn from our mistakes, from the sweetest sunflower to the thorniest rose. I dare you to embrace Black girls falling apart in front of you, who are too loud, too fast, and have an attitude. Black girls with beads and barrettes and scars we can't forget. I dare you to be courageous, to stand up and love Black girls who could use a hug or two, deserving of care and adoration, mama, mentor, auntie. Nurture the mending. You are a mirror of joy and affection. Granny, teacher, sister, I dare you to stop saying this ain't your problem, to stand up and fight, be the glimmer of light. I dare you to protect Black girls, shine brighter than the storms you face, to be a lighthouse when fog rolls your way, to move with deliberation and grace.
I dare you to stand up for Black girls. Yeah, beautiful. If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with writer and editor Allie Jones, along with poets Nia Pearl and literary professor Adrian Danielle Oliver. They'll be performing at the celebratory release of the book When We Exhale, an anthology of Black women rooted in ancestral medicine. And you'll hear from powerful Black women writers on themes of rest, grief, and intimacy. That's next Thursday, May 28th, 7 p.m. at KALW's downtown San Francisco venue. And this is a Sights and Sounds live event. And I also want to acknowledge that Oakland's first poet laureate, Ayodele Nzinga, Lynn Patterson, and Kelechi Ubozo are part of the lineup too, and they are all fabulous writers. So one of the themes is rest, and I was thinking of scholar Trisha Hersey, who wrote Rest is Resistance, and she started a movement in really encouraging Black people to rest. She explained how capitalism can disrupt the rest of for everybody, disrupt our rest, our sleep patterns, all that stuff, just trying to relax. Right. And so when you hear the words rest and Black women. Now, I would say, I don't know if this was real, but I was on social media and it was a Black woman posted. She posted a picture. Again, I don't know if this is real. And she was braiding somebody's hair after she had birthed a child. And I said, I don't understand how somebody could do that. It was like 14 hours within 24 hours. And some people were like, you can rest this. You don't have to be superwoman. So when you hear rest and Black women, what comes up for you? Anybody want to jump in? Y'all resting. Anybody? Do we need to?
I can go. I just felt like I was just talking. So I was okay. Like, let somebody else go, but I can go. I think it's a lesson a lot of us didn't get to learn. Mm-hmm. And most of us have come to it through burnout, through exhaustion, through, you know, like a lot of folks through illnesses, right? Through actually like going through stuff that has shifted how we have to move through the world. And so I think that, I mean, in the same ways that we've gotten like, you know, ancestral medicine from our grandmothers and great grandmothers, we also got this, like, you have to keep moving,
right,
type of energy. And so with that, it's like, yeah, even, you know, something crazy happens and you're like, well, I got to go to work tomorrow. And it's like, do you, you know, that question is like kind of moving through that is important. So I think I would love to see more Black women resting, but I feel like we have to determine what rest looks like for each of us, because it's not prescriptive. It's not all the same. And it's not like, oh, a weekend spa type of moment. It might be for one weekend, but you can't do that every week. So it's like you're building in a sustainability practice. And so I think really what for me, I kind of sit with is like teaching restorative yoga. It's like, it's not just, oh, we're resting today. It's like, how are you resting in every bit of your life, you know, not just on this special Sunday moment, but how do you bring that into your daily breath, into your daily movement? So like, you know, just kind of building that out.
I'm also.
And I was gonna add, Janae.
No, go ahead, Adrian.
Okay. Well, I was gonna add, I think you stumped us with that question because it was like, rest, what is that? So I just love that you mentioned Trisha Hershey's NAAP ministry work because I'm really a fan of her work and the Restic and all the things. And I think when I think of Black women and rest, I think of just permission. Like we're at a moment where we're needing to give ourselves permission because for so long we've had to do so much, like Ali spoke to. And it's kind of, and we saw our mothers and grandmothers working and doing a lot. And so it's all about just setting a new precedent of rest.
I think another element too, because it is so important, like it has to be an active, intentional thing of carving out that space for ourselves, that I think community actually comes in to that practice. And you know, I'm trying to find my own accountability partners in friends and other creatives, both into practice, you know, practicing our artistic, you know, whether it's writing or something else. But I think rest is another way we can show up for each other in terms of reminding each other to take the break, to go outside. Have you walked? Have you drink water today? Just these little ways of checking in with each other in the midst of all the chaos that we're all experiencing. I think that's one way we can help show up for each other and encourage each other to take that time for ourselves too.
You know, I was thinking about Meg Thee Stallion and how, and she was on Broadway doing Chicago, and she took a break, and then she actually wrapped up early her run, you know, on that Broadway show. And then it was after her and Klay Thompson broke up. So it was a rumor like that's maybe why she had stepped away. We don't know, because she hasn't said officially why. But it is funny because I was like, I thought it was because of the breakup. And I was like, if it's because they break up, girl, you better push through that. Don't let that man, I'm all being pride, you know, having us pride. Don't let that man bring you down, allegedly, right? But at the same time, you know, some people had to check me. They were like, you know, if it's heartbreak, why can't she take a break? And I was like, you know, you're right. Because then I had went through something after that. And I was like, you know what? See, that was God telling me. You know, like sometimes when you go through personal issues, it's okay to step away. So I had to be checked on that.
Yeah, and I want to say that she had actually passed out from exhaustion
Right before.
before she took a break. So, you know, I think it was just like there's a compounding, what is it? I think someone talked about like compounding grief. Like there's so much going on that like, you know, it kind of weighs down on a different level.
She had passed out and then she took the weekend off. And then, like, I think a couple of weeks later, then she stepped away. And that was around the time of the breakup. What about, and I actually about themes of rest and Black women, what comes up for you when we talk about Black women and intimacy? And it's something y'all getting. They're laughing, but they're muted. Does
See, the
anyone?
funny thing is that, like, you know, I'm a professor, so I'm like I'd be like, y'all, we gotta answer, because the waiting, I will wait, I will be patient, but you know, sometimes it's like, let's get you an answer, like let's keep it
That's it
flowing.
is radio.
Yeah, I'm like, we're live, so I'm like, we're gonna keep flowing. What I'm thinking about intimacy lately, it's just like the little things. Like it's not like sexual intimacy in the way people assume it to be. Like it, you know, like spending time with folks in nature, you know, like someone being like, oh, I thought about you today. Like just things that are not like typically what we assume to be intimacy. I think
Yeah.
that we live in such a sexualized society. Like, of course, pleasure, do your thing, y'all. Like, I'm not knocking that, but I do feel like Black women in intimacy, like, there's a softness, like a tenderness that I also don't feel like we always get to have. And so I've been kind of sitting with like calling in more of that softness. So y'all know me with the bubbles, with, like
Yes.
whatever, like little bits of ways we
Yes.
call back our inner children, you know?
I know. And Allie, you recently posted some photos of you at Black Fairy Day. And I was like, or Black Fae Day. And I was like, I want to get together with a bunch of people, Black folks dressed up like fairies. So, yeah, I'm going to have to check that out.
It was real magical.
It was. I was like, where's the unicorns? Because that was the vibe it was giving. For people just tuning in, I'm speaking with writer Allie Jones, also poet Nia Pearl, and literary professor Adrienne Danielle Oliver. They'll be performing at the celebratory release of the book When We Exhale, an anthology of Black women rooted in ancestral medicine. And that is next Thursday, May 28th, 7 p.m. at KLW's downtown San Francisco venue. And this is a Sights and Sounds live event. Okay, I gave you guys the final exam because I know there's some scholars and college professors part of this interview. So, yeah, I gave y'all the final exam. So let's hear some more poetry. Who wants to read another piece? Adrian or Neil, who wants to go?
Yeah, I can share the recipe poem.
Go for it.
That Allie mentioned earlier. And this is titled A Recipe for Exhale Cake. With the CAKE standing for Conscious All Knowing Essence.
Nice.
One, ingredients. One part acceptance that you are like mama, wrapped up in deathless regenerative flesh. One teaspoon becoming balm to the through line of mamas from whence you came. Two parts letting go of the through line of mamas from whence you came. Three parts, stepping into your own power. Two dashes of as it was and so it shall be. One cup of prayer. Three scoops of ashe. A pinch of namaste. One dollop of amen. Salah to taste. Two, instructions. Gather three beautiful mixing bowls made of heart whole. Preheat belly to forgiveness degrees over soul. In first bowl, mix one part acceptance plus becoming balm. Let stand until the mixed upness gels into calm. In a second bowl, mix letting go plus ashe, namaste plus ashe, and knowing it will be okay. And seeing into the future again, let the okayness soak all the way in. And I'll stop right there. You'll have to come to the reading to hear the rest or buy the book.
Okay, so you got to come go to the reading so you can get the rest of the recipe.
Yes.
I love poems with recipes. Yeah, because it just really breaks down how sometimes what we're searching for is already there. You know, and to go on inside, and not to be cliche, but that is true though. Sometimes what we're looking for is right in front of us or right inside of us. Nia, you want to read?
Yeah, so I'll read the poem that is published in this anthology. This poem is entitled "In the Day, Diamonds on the Water," and it's after Toni Morrison. The only time the ocean cut me, I bled stories. They said, what a beautiful yet terrifying thing it is to be free. They said, we have traveled years to bring you our names. We knew you'd forget them, or worse, never recognize them in the first place. They said, remember me, unfold your tongue, gather in your hand all the cities your foremothers birthed freedom in, scatter milkweed seeds in the wind, and call us home. So waterlogged and weary, I bandage my wounds with diamonds and rise from seafoam memory, homebound. I've never been far from the page. How else to learn what moonlight looks like through blue-eyed promises? Oh, but to be Sonia, to be Toni, To be wind in a cotton field scattering marigolds. I wish I knew Arkansas clouds like I do the lines on a palm, like I do the recipe for forgiveness. Joy is memory in the refrain, magic too hopeful to stay hidden. See, the trick to befriending stories is listening, after all. Sometimes belonging cannot be traced by tide lines or railroads carved out of the night sky, but rather dog-eared pages and overdue book finds. Having a library to owe things to makes one at home, right? So we write, we sing, we rename our story legacy before they claim we were never here in the first place. Find us on the page, as she said, this is the first battlefield we play on. Hear our words dance, and so we too leap into blissful surrender. And one day we will fly, and one day we will fly.
Song of Solomon at the end, yes. Y'all know I love Toni Morrison. People that listen to the show know I love Toni Morrison. Something that came up for me listening to all of your works and just over the years following you, and yeah, that was beautiful, is nature. And Nia, can you talk about just, you know, the role the environment and nature and Mother Earth plays in your work?
Yeah, I feel like it's so embedded into how I think about the world, how I navigate space. For me in my writing, I'm doing a lot of tracing of memory and ancestry and lineage, and so much of that for me is tied to place. So like reference in this poem is that my grandma's family is from Arkansas and ended up here in Oakland. And so a lot of, you know, I'm revisiting the potential landscapes that they traversed, the ways that our family got to being rooted here in the Bay Area. And so I also have a background in environmental justice. And so I'm always thinking about how are we not only tending to our physical environment, but people are part of the environment. And so I see those two as so interconnected. And so it organically shows up in the way that I write about, you know, my lived experiences and those of my families.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you said that about, you know, we are part of the environment, because for so long we've been taught that we aren't connected to the environment. We've separated Earth from humans and animals from us, but we're all here together. And even the book cover, and let me pick up the book. Allie, laugh it, because I saw this book and it's a beautiful cover. And I was like, ooh, those look like big collard green leaves. And like every time I look at the book, I want some greens. But it's so beautiful, but it's nature. Yeah, I just had to confession. Just a little confession. We have a few more minutes. Was writing for this anthology healing for any of you? And if so, how? Who'd like to go?
Adrian? Yeah, I really am grateful to Allie and her co-editors for the call for us to, I mean, it was just an awesome writing prompt to have, because the writing prompt itself was the beginning of rest. So that prompt to sit down and think about, you know, Black women in rest, and just, it was a meditative kind of invitation for me to work on the poems for this collection.
Nice.
And so this, you know, these are original works just for the call for when we exhale. And like I was saying earlier, when you asked us that question of what comes to mind, you think of Black women in rest, you stumped us with that question, because so often we're just working and doing so much. And yeah. So submitting to this anthology was part of giving myself permission to rest. And it's an invitation for other Black women to join us in this meditation on rest.
Yeah. Who else wants to answer?
Yeah, I agree. I feel in such good company. Just flipping through the book, and just it's so beautifully organized in the way that everyone's poems and stories and recipes are woven together. It feels so comforting, knowing that my poem is housed along so many other brilliant writers. And so it was so healing, not only to be able to share this work, but to like hold the book in my hand. It really feels like it's such a gift. So truly honored to be part of it.
Yeah. What about you, Allie? Because you're, you know, the editor, and Like you said, you didn't know if this was going to.
I had on too many hats. I had on too many hats.
You do have on too many hats. Yeah. Like this period. Allie does so much. Hat and fairy wings.
Letting a lot go. Yeah. But yeah, the process itself was more taxing than I envisioned it being. And so, yeah, to actually have the book live, to see all of the pieces together, to see Maya Angelou and Sonia Sanchez and June Jordan in this anthology was like, okay, all that work was worth it, because I had to go through hoops with permissions and, you know, yeah, all the different things you have to do to actually have these pieces be in this. And so, yeah, I think remembering the why has been really nourishing in the midst of like being in the weeds, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we're out the weeds now. Let's kind of take a moment to look at this like compilation of incredible writers, healers, educators, activists. I mean, it like looking through, I'm like, this is really profound and really beautiful, and truly started out as like a love letter to Oakland and has expanded out.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think about that in terms of roots, right? Like there's so many like mycelium networks in these pages. So
yeah, and I've been I've been sharing with people the link to get the book, people that are outside of Oakland. So because I think you can just, no matter where you live and, you know, no matter who you are, you can just gain so much from this and learn so much from this. And when I read the book before I wrote the foreword, I said, wow. I was like, Allie, you're onto something, because this is really, really beautiful. And we'll have a link on our website, too, on the Sights and Sounds page for people. You can buy the book at the event, or if you want to get it before, we'll have a link so that you can order it. So, ladies, it has been a pleasure. I'm excited about next week. I can't wait till we all get together and be in community with each other. So thank you so much for writing. Thank you for all that you all do in the community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Allie Jones, co-editor of When We Exhale, along with poets Nia Pearl and Professor Adrienne Danielle Oliver. Check them out next Thursday, May 28th, for our live event. It's going to be at 220 Montgomery in downtown San Francisco. Show starts at 7 p.m. RSVP at kalw.org/events. And coming up, we're getting funky E with an E with Miss Sheila E. So stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden on KLW 91.7 FM. And that song you hear is Bemba Colora by Oakland's own Sheila E. featuring Gloria Estefan and Mimi Sakar. The song earned Miss E her first Grammy in 2025, and the original version is a Celia Cruz classic. Sheila E. will be performing in East Palo Alto next Saturday, May 30th, and the show is called Epicenter Illuminated, the Afterglow. It's part of a benefit for the East Palo Alto Center, which provides free arts education to youth. I spoke with Sheila E. about her very early days as a performer in the Bay Area and what people can expect at her upcoming show. Miss Sheila E., welcome.
Thank you so much.
You have done so much over so many years, and I've just been following you for a long time. I know you hear that from everybody, from all your fans. But I want to go back and talk about little Sheila E., little Sheila. And I was reading in one of your bios, when you were five, you gave your first live performance in front of 3,000 people. And I've seen you perform live before. So what was it like for little Sheila to get up in front of an audience with 3,000? That's a lot of people for a five-year-old.
Well, it wasn't 3,000. So it was rewritten, and someone has said that. So I was 5 years old, yes, playing with my dad, okay. The Escobedo Brothers, right there downtown Oakland. And it was for, a couple hundred people, because it was called the Sam's Ballroom and something else. I can't remember the name of Sweet's Ballroom as well. And so, it's right there on Broadway. And so my dad's, him and his brothers were playing. And that was the first time that I played in front of a live audience because I didn't even know that I was able to play. You just saw me playing all the time. I thought, I'm going to bring my daughter up. That 3,000 people came later when I was 15 years old when I decided this is what I wanted to do. So they keep mixing that up, but it's not together. But still, to play in front of two people was enough, let alone a couple hundred people at 5 years old. And it was amazing. It was a beautiful experience. I mostly remember getting dressed and putting on my new dress and patent leather shoes and my little frilly socks. And it was more about the fashion for me. I didn't care about playing the drums. I was getting dressed up at my grandmother's house, and my mom took me, and it was just a wonderful, like, remembering going up the stairs and all that. I don't particularly remember performing per se. I remember my dad picking me up, putting me on the stage, and he sat me on this stool or his seat because I was going to play the congas. And I really don't remember anything after that. But he said I played great. My mom and dad said I played great.
I'm sure you did. Like I said, I've seen you live. So, one of the ways, Miss E, you give back is supporting Bay Area youth in the arts.
Sure.
Particularly those who have limited access to arts education, which unfortunately is a huge issue in the country and has been for a long time. How did the arts environment in Oakland shape Sheila E, the person, not necessarily just the musician, but just who you've become?
The arts itself, I mean, for me, mostly is my dad and my mom. I mean, they were into the arts, not just musically, but the arts in general, as far as drawing, sculpting, like just in the arts itself, creating, making things from scratch, whatever it may be. And music, again, was the key. Being around my dad and having live music in the house. Wow, how fortunate was I and blessed to be able to have live music in the house every day. So that was pretty amazing. Growing up in school at the time, the only thing that I took in school was violin. And I think that was the third grade until the eighth grade, which was pretty awesome because, I mean, I didn't want to take violin, but my dad said, play another instrument. So I took violin, and actually, it was a blessing because I love classical music. It opened up my eyes and my ears to, another culture that we weren't raised really to listen to. And my dad brought all types of music, different genres of music in the house throughout the years of growing up. So, the Bay Area, the culture itself, musically for me, was not just in school. It was all the different places that we were able to play or sit in or go and watch people perform, whether it be at the parks was huge. A lot of people would get their drums and hand percussion instruments to carry to the park, and there would be gigantic drum circles at the time. It was like a big deal. Oh, we're going to meet at, Berklee College, or we're going to meet over on San Pablo or Lake Merritt, whatever it may be. And those were big, to do things like people just going and jamming and playing. So the environment of the Bay Area was really special to be able to grow up in that type of environment with all different types of music, people itself. It was like a melting pot, and it was really amazing to, go from Oakland to Berkeley to San Francisco and all the different types of music within the community. It was just amazing.
You're again, you're still involved in the community up here in the Bay. You co-founded the nonprofit Elevate Oakland, which has provided training and membership in arts education to Oakland Public School students. And I interviewed the trio Oakland Rising as well, and I know they performed with you for an event during the Super Bowl, and they were so excited. And I've just seen how you've been a presence and a mentor to some younger artists up here in the Bay Area. What are you teaching up and coming artists that are entering the music industry that maybe you didn't know?
Well, Elevate Oakland is servicing 3,000 kids. We're servicing 3,000 kids. And it's myself, Lynn Mabry from the Bay Area, from Berkeley, Jason Hoffman, and Yoshi from the Yoshi's nightclub. Our curriculum is pretty much taught during school hours and not an after school or before school program. And what we do that's different is we're actually using local musicians from the Bay Area. If they're home or not on tour or able to attend, we use them as teachers to teach the classes in the schools during school hours. So Ashlyn Cole, we use her. She's a vocalist from Oakland. She used to sing with Larry Graham forever. She has sung with so many artists. Huge, amazing, really powerful singer and very versatile. And she has sung with me and many others. We use her as one of the teachers, and she teaches vocal. She teaches a lot of different things, but she's one of our vocal teachers. Amazing. My brother Juan teaches classes there for drums and percussion. We've used DJ Sharp to teach, you know, DJing. We use local musicians to help the kids. And that's definitely different than when I was growing up, you know, to say, hey, we have this artist from, you know, from the Bay Area, not on tour, but is actually teaching the class. It's very cool.
What do you think is special about Oakland as far as, I mean, so many great talented people like yourself have come out of Oakland, Miss E. What's in the water here?
Whatever it is funky, and it can't nobody mess with it. Can't nobody mess with the funk and the water in the Bay. It's just it's a whole nother vibe. It really is. And I always talk about how blessed I am to be able to be born in the Bay because of all the different genres of music. And when you have, you know, from rock and roll to hip hop to Latin jazz to funk, you know, you got Tower Power, Sly Stone, Larry Graham, the Pointer Sisters, Carlos Santana, my dad, Pete Escovedo, Grateful Dead. Then you got hip hop and Confunction and Hammer and Tupac even came there and said, Bay. I mean, yeah, you've got so many artists, you know, Too Short, E-40. I mean, the list goes on and on. Digital Underground. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many. Bonnie Raitt. I mean, I could keep going on. There's a lot. I don't know what it is other than I always say that we were somewhat of a melting pot, like a pot of gumbo, that there were so many different spices and cultures and the community itself. We really supported each other, you know, musically to like get involved in listening to this person and that person and the different bands that were put together. You would be able to go and see bands like all the time. There were so many places to play in the Bay, from Berkeley, a lot of places in Berkeley, some in Oakland, San Francisco, you know, Vallejo, San Jose. I mean, it was endless, the places that you could play in. And so much of it has changed. But I think that's what's so special is the community, the different genres, the people come from all over the place, and we all accept each other. That's just amazing.
Yeah. And I can't imagine, like, or I could imagine being like maybe in my 20s in the 70s and 80s, you know, when you all were coming up and just the things that you were doing back in the day and the music venues. I probably would never be at home.
Oakland's in the house.
What?
And Miss Sheila E, I spells funky, F-U-N-K-E.
No, it's F-O-N-K-E. Funky.
Funky. All right. If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with the iconic artist Sheila E. She'll be performing at Epicenter Illuminated, the Afterglow. This is following a fundraising event for the East Palo Alto Center. And the center provides free arts education to youth. And the event is Saturday night on May 30th. If you have not seen this woman live, she's incredible on television. But when you see her live and you see her, the energy she puts in and those drums take a beating. Lovely beating.
You know, I can't help it. I can't help it. It really is. I enjoy so much what I get to do. Is just, again, you know, being raised in a family, a musical family, and my mom just being strong and athletic, and you know, all those two elements together. It's like, man, what a they created me. God created the gift, and it's crazy. I know that when you talked about where we're going to perform, my dad and my brothers have performed there not long ago, and I was mad that I couldn't come in and sit in with them. So I'm hoping maybe if they're around, they can come sit in with me. That would be awesome. But I love it to be able to return back to the Bay, our home. You know, the people are amazing. Everyone's going to have a great time, really. It's, you know, when you come to see this show, Who I am as an artist represents the Bay Area, and that which we have talked about already. We have spoken about all the different genres of music. That's what I incorporate in my music is all genres. The people that I've learned from growing up, from my dad, I play his music. It was a little bit of Sly, a little bit of even the Beatles. I mean, I try to put together a little bit of everything for everyone. And that's what made me the artist that I am, is to be able to do that. Because when I first signed my first record deal, they wanted to tell me, it's like, you're going to sign as an R&B artist. And I'm thinking, well, that's cool. My music is that, but I would like to, also incorporate a little bit of Latin. And they're like, well, you're going to sign as an R&B artist. Well, I crossed over to pop. But so the way that I incorporated still my roots and what my daddy taught me was to do it live, and also incorporate a little bit of gospel music way early on in the 80s when I was performing. I love the Hawkins Bay Area again. I love Tremaine Hawkins, and we sometimes would do her song during the show. It's just like you're going from this to that. It's an experience. So I hope that people come and check us out. It's an experience. You'll have a great time. And you never know who's going to be on
Yeah,
stage.
that's what I love
Meaning,
about your shows and your dad's shows,
no,
because you
you
never
never
know who's going
know.
to pop up.
You never know who's going to pop up. But not only that, it might be you that be on stage. That might be on stage, because I pull up the audience members a lot. So you never know. So get ready, because you can't say no to Sheila E. That's all I'm saying.
You can't, because when and then too, when you're performing, to hear, that's why I said too, to see you in person, because I saw you performing with your dad at Yoshi some years ago, and to feel the vibrations of when you're drumming too as well, is an experience, just to feel the vibration of you, which is why they call you the queen of percussion. But I want to talk about your dad. So I interviewed your father in 2018. Now, he told me in 2018, Miss E, that he was going to retire.
This is his retirement. No, this is his retirement. He said he's going to retire, and he is retiring. We just told him that he can't quit. So this is his retirement. We're still keeping him working. So as much as we can keep him working, he's 90. I mean, I don't know how he's doing it, but he's doing it.
Do you see yourself still performing at 90?
I have no idea. I don't know how he's doing it. It's hard for me now. I have no idea. I know that at some point, I can't do what I'm doing now, because it's way too hard. It's beyond what my body goes through. People think it's easy, and it is not, for so many reasons.
No.
But the thing is I know that I would always want to be involved in the music industry or the business itself. Whether it be MDing like I've done, and I don't actually have to play, putting bands together for other artists, production, I love behind the scenes, doing some television shows, whatever. I believe that I'll always be involved in some form or capacity of, the industry itself. So.
I'm reimagining your dad putting you on that stool when you were a little girl, what, back in the day when you were 5. And what has been the best advice he has given you about being an artist and being creative?
He said you should have been an attorney.
No.
We need an attorney in the family. I tell young people, I was like, you need to go get your business a license first. No, it's really about the business. I mean, we can be very talented, and if we don't know the business, read the fine lines, get someone to help you, keep asking questions until you really understand. Don't let anything go by when you don't understand. Don't feel like there's a dumb or stupid question. You keep asking, and you keep asking until you know.
So you received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 2024. You won your first Grammy in 2025 for your salsa album. Is it pronounced Bailar?
Bailar.
Bailar, which is Spanish for dance. What has so far been your greatest honor in your career?
Greatest honor. Every single time I hit the stage, it's an honor. Every time I receive an award, it's an honor. Every time I have Q&As just recently in Miami with 250 students, it's an honor. Like, it's everything that I do, I'm humbled and grateful for. So there's not just one. It's my entire lifetime of events and giving, and whether it be a one-on-one with one person, doesn't have to be 3 or 60 million people when we do TV shows and stuff. It's not about the amount of people and what we do. It's just the time that we spend to share our stories, and especially the young people. So
you're still selling out shows. You're still recording music. You're still doing your thing. What's next for you?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have a list, and the list is insane. So whatever God says, let's do, we go. That's it. That's how we roll.
Amen to that. Ms. Sheila E., it has been an honor and a privilege. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you. Nice to meet you. I hope you come to the show.
That was Sheila E. Check her out on Saturday, May 30th in East Palo Alto for Epicenter Illuminated. And just a heads up, East Palo Alto residents can get a very, very deep discount on tickets. And we'll have a link on the Sights and Sounds page. And that second song you heard during the interview from Sheila E. is called Oakland in the House. And that's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darton. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, and board operator, Damian Miner. And thank you for tuning in. Remember to mark your calendars to join us for the celebration of the release of When We Exhale, an anthology of Black women rooted in ancestral medicine. And this uplifting collection, Black women writers reflect on rest, grief, intimacy, cultural memory, and healing. You heard from Allie Jones, Nia Pearl, and Adrian Danielle Oliver earlier in the show. They will be performing. Oakland's first poet laureate, Ayodele Nzinga, will be there. Wonderful poet Lynn Patterson and Kelechi Ubozo, also a great writer. They will be performing. I will be performing pieces from the book, too, and reading my work as well. And again, that date is Thursday, May 28th at 7 p.m. at KLW's downtown San Francisco venue at 220 Montgomery Street, a short walk from the BART station. We'll be selling books, too. People are really, really excited about this. I am, too, so make sure you RSVP at klw.org/events. Also, some great events coming up tomorrow night. Miko Marks will be performing. I interviewed her last week. She'll be performing at Yoshi's tomorrow night. And also, too, Tamika Thompson, who is a horror writer, writes about social issues and horror. She'll be in conversation too as well at Books Inc. in Alameda, so definitely want to check that out. That's going to be a really, really, really great program. And we'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves, be good to each other, take care of yourself.